Well, Harold Johnson here in Black Line.
Yes.
Tell me first, what year were you born?
I don't remember. I was born in 1945.
The year World War II came to an end. And in all that length of time, have you been living here in Black Line?
I have been living round about, I have indeed. Mostly round Black Line here.
And so, was your father, was he a farmer or was he actually in business here?
My mother was a teacher and my father, well, Granny was in the shop here. She started the shop in 1901.
This drapery shop?
Aye. Well, actually, in fact, she had she'd 5 years employed upstairs. She was a trained seamstress. You know, she'd run down to I can't think of the name of the town, but near Derry, you know, where there was a big place doing all kinds of dressmaking and stuff. And she trained as a seamstress there. You know, just served her time to it.
All right, so there was a small enterprising business going on here. So.
And then she came out here and she set up making stuff upstairs. She had 5 years, a couple from Donegal, came down here and they married local men in the 1900s, you know.
Goes back that far.
Oh, 1901. So they used to make a lot of ladies' flannel petticoats and stuff, red flannel, out of red flannel, for underclothes. And she used to make odd wedding dresses for people that would afford them at that time. And they made other types of stuff. But then when the manufacturing then started pipping up there after the First World War, she just did bits and pieces, not, you know what I mean? And she went into more general drapery that time. And most of the stuff that came from Belfast at that stage. You did all the stuff one day in Belfast and it'd be at Beltrue railway station the next day.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you know what I mean? You wouldn't think.
Yeah.
But that's the way the lines just, the and trains all connected up.
And it was the railway really that opened up the countryside.
It did. The Sligo Leitrim Railway. It was laying down in 1879.
Yeah. And your country, if you go around the area here, it is very remote and it's very rugged and rough. And I'd say the people out here are similar. Would you agree? But, you know, hard living, hard to survive.
As bad as you'd expect. You know, I did a lot of research there on history and different things about, you know, and I saw in the annals of the Four Masters where there was an island in Loch McNean that the High Kings of Ireland had accommodation on it. That when there'd be troubles down in Tara and that if there's any invasion or anything, that they'd shift their whole families down to this island in Loch McNean.
Safe haven.
A safe haven. And I wondered what island were they talking about, you see. And I was chatting a few old men about 20 years ago and I'd suspect that there was the one down in the lower lake there. There's about 40 or 50 acres in it. And it's just at the top of the Arny River and that. And one of the men told me, say, do you ever notice anything about that island? Oh, he says, I was down there in around 1920s, he says, and there was big lines of oak, 30-foot long oak trees. You know, just with the branches and all, lines of them there. And he says, they were up on this bank and they were around there. He says, they were too far out for them to get them in unless you... Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So that's proof.
So that there had to be a stockade, I reckoned. Mm-hmm. That there was a big stockade around it. You know? So then the next thing then, I says, now, if there were there any other evidence that we'd get, And I happened to look up in the library in Enniskillen where this brooch type or thing was found when they were clearing the Kjartan's Quarry. There's a different name, yes, but yes. Kjartan's Quarry there, just down the road.
Yeah.
And they were clearing the top to put down the blast, you know, in it. And they're down there and they found this lovely, beautiful brooch.
It was something like a Tara brooch.
What was I tell you what it said about it? Yeah. As far as I know, I'm not sure whether it's in the library in Enniskillen or whether they sent it up to the Ulster Museum, but it's between the two of them. And the write-up, I read the write-up on it, and they were saying about this, it was great that they're finding this. And as far as I remember, now, my date mightn't be just 100% right, but as far as I remember, it was in the 6th century brooch. And it's, the interesting thing they said was, it's finer than anything that was ever found at Tara.
My goodness.
Yeah. You know, that brooch. So you had a link with the brooch, and you had the link with the island, and you see, the reason why that would be an ideal place for them to live, that brooch then was a link. It had to be a direct link. And then, you're laughing, I tell you, there's an old road track coming down through Llanjevelin, through the Yap, the Llanjap, as I said. And some of the old people always says that's the Tara Road. They called it the Tara Road.
Probably the old road.
Old pass down through the mountain. So then, the next thing then, I looked at, there was an ordnance survey of 1828, 1830. And they did a big write-up on Holy Well over here in Beltrue, and did a big write-up on it, and this says that there was a great memory that St. Patrick, when he was here and stayed here for a few months, you know. Mm-hmm. And I says, where the hell would St. Patrick stay? Only on the flippin' Hastings Island. Do you know he was that way?
Okay, well, that's...
I know, that's just...
That's setting the scene. That's giving me a kind of a feel for the background. But but farming and living here generally was... It must have been on poor quality land and...
But I'll come back to the reason why there was always a big, huge population here in the early Stone Age, or in the Bronze Age, and Iron Age, for the simple reason... Those two lakes were full of salmon, and there was three runs of salmon in the year. And there was several runs of eels into it. And where that island sits is the main river that goes by it, and it had plenty of high protein to eat and all the rest. And these were all oak forests round here, even up in the 1800s. Fellas writing talked about the big oaks around Loch McNean.
Imagine.
And all this low area around here, do you see, was full of wild deer and wild pigs and everything. And
plenty to eat.
Plenty to eat.
Yeah.
You know, it's not barren hills.
So,
you know.
It's also, is it the main route if you were heading towards Beleek or Sligo and these places?
You had to come this way. It was the only land sort of between the Erin and the Shannon.
Yeah.
You know, you had to come up this way. And that's why it was so heavily fortified up round Dour and that.
Okay.
It was all laid out with military precision, you know, way they have them.
So, just fast forward to today, an hour or two, say 40 years ago, when the border, is there a definite... distinction between people that live on one side and people that live on the other side? Have you found
well, there is and there isn't, because they were all kind of intermarried, you know.
But did they, say the Protestant families, did they stick together and the Catholic families stick together?
Well, most of them all left from here, 1920s. They moved north, you know.
Why did they move north?
No, my mother was a teacher here, and when she came in 1923, there was 43 pupils at school with her. One teacher school, 43.
From the Protestant community?
Aye, 43. And then families all left. Some of the other older families had sons killed in the First World War, and that was so many more gone, You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it all had a big effect on it. The Strood closed, it lasted 1972. The Strood closed at about, there was about down to about six.
When the Troubles broke out, there were a lot of families that were forced out of their homes. Am I right in saying?
Well, there was a lot that were drawn at that stage. Most of them were drawn.
But you had the McClures, you had the Kerrs, you had the Longs, you had quite a number of families that were the McVitties.
That's down
Garrison.
That's Garrison Parish you're talking about.
But
it was Shannon Ritchie that was here that did Garrison Parish at that time, or Chitley Parish as it was, you know.
And was that seen as a kind of a, we want to get rid of you? Was that the
there was an awful lot shot that time. Oh, should we say it?
You lived through it.
Oh, there was more bangs and rockets fired up the main street there at the bridge. I remember one Christmas, we were fierce busy in the shop, you know. And then they start firing the bloody rockets up the road. And there's people, they're in here, oh God, they couldn't get out quick enough and get away. And we didn't see them for an age. They were down the Christmas shop. They stopped people coming down, do you see, to the town here. These rocket launches that fired up the main street in Beltran.
Who was firing the rockets?
The IRA.
Why were they trying to stop people coming up here?
Well, it wasn't trying to stop people. They were attacking the barracks that was there, you see.
Yeah. Where was the barracks now?
It's where those new houses it was tossed. And they built those flats on it over there. But they used to fire up. And then we had the checkpoint on the corner here. And there was about 45 guards and about six sergeants here.
It was the Irish Army
station. And the Irish Army there as well. On the corner, you know. They were there, and you see, they had to patrol the roads up to Chilty, you know, all around the mountain and up and down, you know. There was a 24-hour mount on all the time, you know.
So you had the Garda Síochána and the customs guards.
And there's customs as well. There was 10 or 12 custom men there.
And then on the other side, just not only a mile away, was it?
Just across in Beltrue then. Yeah. You had the police in Beltrue, but they seldom ever came out.
Yeah.
You know, you had the police and army based in Beltrue, but they didn't bother going out. You see, there were some bad explosions there. There must have been a bit. Well, there was one policeman just shot over the bridge, a sergeant. And then there was another man shot out the Garrison Road there. And then there was a milkman that was on the UDR, and he was shot up the back there. You know, this was all going on at that time, you know.
And so that tit for tat, that, you know, that was going on. Were you ever, did you find yourself drawn into it at any stage?
Not really, no. Sure. What could you do? Sure. Say, Tony, carry on.
But did you find yourself intimidated, say, at any stage?
Not that we really thought about, you know.
But what happened? Was there any? Did anybody like knock at the door and say?
No, we never had any threats. Yeah, you know, it was. I don't know what the reason was, but there never was.
Yeah.
You know, just they carried on. Well, you see, Beltrue was okay, you know, but the whole... I must tell you about... you see, this town went through the 20s and the 30s, and there was a lot of people headed for America in the 20s because there was a big outbreak of fluke disease and a lot of animals died, and a lot of fellas packed in and headed for America in 26 around that time, and they were just in jobs over there when they hit the depression in America.
Yeah,
you know, and they had to go through hardship, and they didn't have enough money to run by it.
Imagine.
That was the sad thing. You're right.
Your memory would certainly go back to the early Troubles.
In the Troubles here was around 1822.
Yeah.
The time of the treaty and all of that.
Yeah.
You know.
So there was persecution
and there was continually. There was always something going on backwards and forwards. I must tell you about 19 on the 3rd of September 1939 the war started that Sunday, right? On that Sunday morning, a big international circus arrived at the Trustum Hut just over the road. There, Tin Hut.
Oh, something like Fawcett's or Duffy's?
No,
or
it wasn't. No, it was. I can't remember the name of it. You know what I mean? I should have written it down, but it was the old thing. They used to always talk about it, you know? They had elephants and tigers and all sorts of stuff with them, and huge circus. And the part outside the Trustum Hut, and Trustum's man. There's only one man there, do you see? At the time, you know, 1939, there wasn't much traffic on the road, if you know what I mean. And he says, oh, yeah, do you have a three weeks' notice before we can say you? And says, your man, no, he says, we had to clear out, we had 15 German nationals working in the circus. And we had to get them out of the north immediately, otherwise they'd be interned. And Black Lane was the nearest town, you know.
So that posed a problem.
So they had the whole thing, the whole trucks parked away over the road into Beltrude, but they'd got all the other ones over here, do you see, and they parked in round the back lane here and they were all over the place. So he phoned up headquarters, of course. I don't know where headquarters was at that time. It might have been Drogheda or Sligo, maybe. You know, the customs, he phoned up there and they're saying, I have a circus out here and there's elephants and there's tigers and there's everything here. I don't know what I'm going to do with them. And they thought he was drunk.
That's an amazing story. Yeah.
This is exactly how it happened. Was my father and the other was talking about it. And he says, no, I'm not. They're out the door. What am I going to do with them? So they finally explained to him whoever the headquarters was, and he says, well, let them come on in, he says, but don't let them go any further than Black Lion. He says, they should park in Black Lion, he says, and we'd clear it in about 2 days, maybe, or thereabouts. And then he says, the one that was it all right to put the tent up. So they put the tent up in that place for the
just here in Black Lion?
Just behind us here, the Enterprise Centre.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I was thinking about. And they put it up there, and the whole country was talking about this, and they came down to put on a show on the Sunday night. They didn't want to miss the show, and the whole country heard about it, and it came down, and the place was packed with people, and I don't know what all, and had stilts, men on stilts. I mean, every man talking, it cheers of it, that these boys come out on the stilts, and they're putting in leaflets into the top windows.
I see. My God.
You know, and this was one of the seven wonders of the world. The point I'm making is, from that Sunday on, Black Lion took off in a wartime boom.
In what way?
With plenty of butter here, plenty of sugar, and the stuff was all rationed in the north at that stage, and they had their own sugar factory, you see, and there's plenty of sugar, you see, and there's all the rips of butter. And it was a big boom.
Oh, you know? I see. So there was money to be made.
Money to be made, and the plates had drinked, and there was nothing at that stage, you see, and it put the town going that time.
And then, of course, there was a big upset in the middle of the 1950s, when 1956 and 7, when you had the first of the recent Troubles, you know, with Ben McHugh
And Sean South and all of those.
Yeah. So, I mean, these were local lads now that got involved again. Mm. So why was there, why did people get up in arms when everything was just going nice and smoothly?
Listen, every century throws up its own unusual happens, if you know what I mean. I used to hear my father says, he says, when cattle trade would be growing well and everything would be growing well and you'd be expecting, you know, that continue, the next thing you'd have a dart straight, he says. And then the price of cattle would slump with a dart straight. Do you know? And then there was one Christmas around about 1959, was it? Or 58? I can't remember which. It was around that time. Christmas trade was hopeless. there was nobody about at all for Christmas. And the reason was, there was a dirt strike in America, and the American money didn't get over. People were dependent on their relatives in America to send them dollars to spend at Christmas.
I see.
And it didn't come in till the end of January. And then the end of January, for about 3 weeks, it was like Christmas again. They were all down with the dollars that sent, you know.
Yeah. Imagine.
And that was the way it was at that stage in the 50s. Another thing, too, was some of them would write to me father and tell him, he knew them, do you see, before they went, would you get two sets of heavy wool underwear for the old fella at home and get the same whatever for the mother as well and bring them up two pairs of Fortsford blankets and the whole list and anything else you think they need. You know, if he needs boots, give him boots and fit whore out. He says, and just send the bill over to us. Do you know?
Yeah.
So he'd send them over right out what they'd brought, and he'd send them over, they'd convert it into dollars, and if it was $20, $25, $50, it could be anything, you know. He'd just send it over that, and then they'd post back then, as soon as they get the bill, they'd post back maybe $50 to him. And that is paid for the ones at home. They says they'd done it, the reason why they did it was if they sent the money over to them, they wouldn't spend it. They were that careful with money, they'd put it into the bank. And when you'd be home, they'd be giving it to you, you know, there's your money. You know, they wouldn't be afraid to spend it. And he says, they'd be far happier to know that they're good and warm for the winter.
Yeah.
Do you know, good wool underwear and anything that they needed. And that was the way that went on.
So there was attention paid to having that. But what I am trying to ascertain is, I think the people around the bordering areas had to be tough to survive.
Oh, listen, all border areas create their own economy. You know, Black Lane was a boom time there in the 40s and into the 50s because there was a massive amount of ones from the north coming in here. The American base down in Castle Largedale, they used to come up to Black Lion here to buy drinking or get drinking or whatever they want. And they had a deal with a man up there, and they used to bring him up aviation fuel. Do you know? He had a hackney business, and of course he was very little petrol, you see. And with the aviation fuel, you're supposed to mix a good bit of petrol with it. Do you know what I mean?
Of course.
And it was highly flammable, you know.
Of course, yes.
And he used to drive the Hackney, MG Hackney he had with this aviation fuel in it. Do you follow?
So,
but will I tell you what happened to him?
Yeah.
There was a sister of mine had trouble with her eyes, and she had to go up to see the specialist in Cavan, a Dr. Smith. And my father had a car, but he had no petrol. So he had to engage this man that was to emergency Hackney waters, who says, and stoned up all right. And when they're coming back down to Belturbet in the car, on fire.
Because of
the aviation fuel.
How did they survive that?
Fortunately, there was a man, mechanic about, that knew what to do, and he got it out. Got the fire out. I don't know how the hell he put it out, but he got it out, and had to go and get another taxi man in Belturbet to run them home.
So, Harold, was there a blind eye turned towards it at the customs, you know, people that they'd know coming back and forth?
They never bothered with local people.
Yeah.
But they'd go after strangers. But there was an undertaker down there, and he couldn't get shrouds. There's no cloth to be got here for making shrouds. You see, for funerals, you know, that's shroud. So, anyway, there was a friend of his down in Lisburn that was in the undertaking business as well, and he contacted him. He said, would you ever be able to get me some shrouds? I'll send you up about 20 of them that'll keep you going for a while, and it'll get some of that cloth. You see, the cloth couldn't be got. So, anyway, the parcel, there was a man in the pub, and he says, I'm getting a parcel sent up to you. He says, whenever it comes, will you smuggle it over for me? It was that time that lifted everything off your coming over the border, you know. So, anyway, he came in he went over and he says, oh, it'll come all right. So and the parcel arrived and your man arrived over and he says, I have that parcel for you, you know. He says, where is it? He says, oh, he may come into the kitchen, he said. So, into the back kitchen in the pub, do you see? So he went in yonder and he had this big, huge top coat that was three times too big for him. And he had put the shrouds all on him. He wore them, you see, and he just walked by the hut and there was no remarks passed. And he took the overcoat off and then he took a shroud off and folded it and gave it to him and took another one off, do you see, and folded and gave it to him, you
so
see.
So there were the smuggling days. But they were the smuggling. But when it came to the 1970s.
The undertaker, yeah. But the undertaker says to him, do you know, he says, lad, he says, that's the first time I ever seen a man taking a shroud off.
But when it came to the 1970s, then things changed because you had more security on the border then.
We had all
that. And then everything just started to get a little bit dangerous. People got hurt. People got shot.
They did indeed.
And so then, support. The places like Blackline here had safe houses. And they looked after the people who were travelling up from the Republic. From down south. And there was a blind eye turned towards
there
that.
There was. Oh, aye, indeed. There was a lot of them about the mountain up there and all over. But, there'd be an awful lot of what you'd call Republican families. If you know what I mean, that they were always involved.
Would you consider yourself a Republican family?
Not really, no. No, we wouldn't.
But you'd look at those people and say, you know, did you say, look, they're dangerous, or we'll ignore those, or did you do anything about it?
Just carried on. The guards then kept a tight eye on everything.
But did they?
They did. They did. Done the best they could.
So they had the intelligence. They kind of knew.
Knew what was going on, you know. But it was a pity so many had to get killed. That's the sad thing.
And for a long time.
There was a car bomb by the UVF down on the corner there.
The UVF travelled down here?
They said it was them. Some of them.
And who? When was that and who did they?
Oh, Lord, what year was it? You know, I can't remember. It was in the 70s, okay.
Yeah.
The 70s, 74, was it? About 74, I think, or 73, down on the corner. And then they put on a permanent checkpoint then. There all the time. The car left in on the day, and the whole town was evacuated out. And some of them headed for Beltrue, and some of them headed out the road and up to Lahan House. And there were people who put up to Lahan House, you know.
And why was the bomb placed there? Or
it was just they were attacking, retacking along the border, you know, sort of. They done one in Swad, you see, as well, and they did one in Belturbet.
Okay, and, you know, and so they
just that kind of must have been. I think they thought it was they're all called them the UVF, and also there could have been any of them organisations. Nothing was ever.
Was there anybody killed with that explosion?
No, there wasn't. But there was a lot of damage there done to the shops there and down on the Diamond and around there. Windows broke. And bits and pieces, you know.
Was your window?
We had a window I think broke or something.
Yeah,
you know.
That was all part and parcel of what was going on.
What was going on, You see, you're kind of used to it. It's hard to believe. You know, I mean, if you'd only have in that time up and down, you want to live another hour for travelling time, you know, because you had to wait checkpoints and all of that. But you're sort of not used to it. You're sort of worn into it, you know.
And they weren't too many Protestants living up around here then, was
no,
there?
No. The Protestant population went down. Went down a lot. They just stayed out, really. Any of them was left.
The security forces couldn't control the area, so they had
really
to get out.
Well, they just all seemed to move and all that. They got old indeed, a lot of them. So it happened a lot of them, you know.
Yeah. But they were, I mean, there were families that weren't young and old.
Just stayed out.
Or at least they had to get up and sell their livestock and move out.
That was more in the 20s now than in the 70s there, you know. That went on in the 20s.
But it went on as well in the 70s.
In Garrison. Down that end of the country, they did. They did a lot. Had a dangerous place down there, do you see?
Do you know the farmer by day that would be farming, and then he was a security man by night? So these were, when you were stopped at a checkpoint, were you harassed yourself, or did you put up?
Just searched the cars and the vans and searched everything, you know, to see that you hadn't general security, you know.
Yeah.
It was the same here with the yards. If there were strange yards on, to stop and, you know, look in your boot and look inside and up and down. And that was the way it went, you know.
But if that's happening for a number of years, does that affect your mind? Does that kind of throw you against?
You get used to it. See, the flipping trouble is, you see, when the yards quit the checkpoints down there and took away the security. Jesus, we had more fetting robberies here with the ones coming in because there was no security. Robbed a pile of old people up the road and around here and up and down, lifting everything.
So, in a way, it was good to have them around.
But it was good to have them around. You know, from that point of view, do you know, we noticed an awful change.
Okay, with all the army and the police and so on, was it good for business?
We would, you know. The yards there now, they'd be staying around about, you know, there'd always be something or other, you know. More people about that way, you know.
Yes. And did they, because they were up here for so long, did they bring their families?
No,
or was there anything like that?
No. The done, I think they used to do maybe 3 weeks. I don't know what the rota was. And then they might go home for 2 weeks, you know, somewhere like that. They'd be on 24 hours nearly, you know. They'd fill up the hours, whatever way. I don't know what way they worked. That was
With your knowledge in history now, you can tell me this. Then you had the FCA and you had the Army, the LDF, or
You mean the Northern Ireland local the LDF, the local defence forces, the UDF, or the UDF, what the hell you call the ones that are in the north?
Or no, we'll stick with the FCA. So the FCA and the
The FCA weren't used at that stage much.
But did they kind of join up with the National Army?
There would be, a lot of them joined up the army from the FCA at that time. We were down in Finner.
And Finner was a big camp in South Donegal.
It was, there beside Bundoran.
Yeah.
It was a huge camp during the First World War.
But then during the Troubles, were they keeping the Bogside? Some of the children from the Bogside were brought down
and stayed.
Do you remember that?
I had moved down. Nobody came here at all. It was all over that way.
Was it?
And on down, you know.
Yeah. And has life changed much in that time?
Oh, well, the popular people's drawn from this town. You know what I mean? The post office is drawn out of it. We're having a filling station. We're having a shop left.
And,
thing is run down. The only thing that's doing is Nevin Maguire across the street there.
Yeah.
So you can't get petrol or diesel in Black Lion today. There's a filling station out there and it's closed this long time.
But people now are moving more towards towns and cities and are moving away from...
But they're not here.
Yeah.
So this area here, Black Lion, popped the census ratings as the area with 40% empty houses in it. Yeah. And it's even more than that.
But...
You know what I mean? And then there's an awful lot of ones just pensioners and that...
But you're here in the Republic. Hmm. And you cross over the bridge and you're in Belcoo.
Not true, right?
And you're in the north.
You're in the north, aye.
So it you're surrounded by... Porters, that's
but
why
there was always smuggling going on. There was butter smuggling, there was big business.
Yeah,
there was a load of Australian butter. They had a load of Australian butter dumped into the north and was sold at a half a crown, right? A pound, and butter here was 4.9 at the time. And like the fella says, he says, you'd want to have the patriotism of Wolf Tone to buy it at 4.9. Do you know? Like, you don't.
Yeah.
So the border was
a good idea. There was a woman
was a woman from Black Lion here. She drove over the pram, over the Beltrude, you see, and she drove over and did her things, and she's coming back. And there was a trusted man there. He came from Kerry, actually. He was a Cork. No, he was a Cork man. He used to talk with a real Cork accent.
Did you know his name?
I knew him, surely. He was Trustello.
What was his name?
Trustello.
Yeah.
Oh, he'd be 100 now if he was alive. Do you know? Do you know, I doubt. I think he had a post office or something down in Cork somewhere, or the wife had or something or other. So he was here at that stage. And he came out, he says, you know, ma'am, he says, that child you have in that pram, he's sitting fierce high up in it. He says to her, you see? Ah, she says, he's a big child, that, isn't he? He's a big child, you know. Well, I'd be worried about him falling out now. He's very unbalanced there, do you see? Ah, she says, he's all right. I just go on ahead. And she went on ahead, do you see? But he was letting her knew that the child was sitting on something. There was a box of butter she had at the bottom of the pram, do you see? She put a blanket over it and she had the child sitting on
But that was amazing. So the border actually stood to Black Line in a big way. It was good for business.
And then the drink trade then. Drink was cheaper, always cheaper here. And the cigarettes was cheaper and tobacco was cheaper here. And for an example now was one of the tobacco travellers, I was chatting one time and he was telling me that he sold more tobacco and cigarettes in Black Lion than he did in the town of Sligo at that stage. They used to buy the plug tobacco, you know, the Maurice tobacco and the, what is the other one, Maurice Twist and Yachtsman tobacco and Mick McQuaid and the whole lot. Yeah. There was one place down here, which was he done a bit of wholesaling too, but they used to buy it by the hundredweight, maybe 200 weight of tobacco. What did that cost today?
Well, I'm sure there were a lot of people coming.
There was.
For that.
Flying for the cigarettes as well.
And that kind of trade that went on, there was no fear at that stage. I mean, you had plenty of the Protestant community coming over here.
Oh, so. Sure, for heaven's sake, there was an awful crowd coming over to get the butter and that. Everything was scarce, you see. The rationing was enforced, you know. Mm. And they came over and, sure, we used to sell curtain material. And this woman would get curtain material wrapped around them and put on a coat, put it over the bother.
So that was even...
Do you know what I mean? That was the way.
Yeah, that was the way they did it.
And all the women then, that'd be over for tobacco or cigarettes then, they'd have big bras on them and they'd fill up the bras with the tobacco and the cigarettes and everything. You know, that went on. You know what I mean?
Can I ask you a question?
It's a hard fight, you know what?
Can you remember the day that all that changed? That
trade collapsed in 82, the budget of the 80s. They brought in a budget here and it put the price of petrol stay high in comparison to the north. And put the VAT up and everything. And the result is that it left it uncompetitive this side of the border. That's why all the filling stations all closed up along the border there and round, because they went over to Belcrew to get all the petrol they want. And other stuff as well. The VAT went up and it killed the pub trade. Up to 82, the drink was cheaper here.
Yeah.
Up to about 82, roughly that 82, 83, early 80s. And that killed the whole pub trade here.
But
there used to be 6 pubs here.
But during the violence in the 70s,
it affected the night trade.
Do you remember the first incident over here that kind of scared people off coming back? Do you remember the first shooting or the first...
Sure, sort of dragged it on. And I said the first man that was shot over there was the milk man, the fellow that collected the milk. But another interesting thing too was, you see, up to before the troubles of that other started, you see, out that other road there, Marble Arch Caves, that end off from Anna was policed from Belcrew.
Yeah.
Do you know? And the police used to go through, had a concession to cycle through on their bicycles. They'd go out there and do the patrols out there and come back and cycle back to Belcrew with their uniforms. That concession.
Oh, I see.
Do you know? And the time of the smuggling and that, the police had to go and check the smuggling. That time, that the police were given that job. Do you know? The smuggling. But anyway, when they come into Black Lion, that stop at Dolan's and that went to Dolan's and have a drink, do you see? And when they come back, they'd stop again and have another drink on their way back. So all the ones that we wonder now, oh, the police is out there. Well, what way is the bicycles pointed? If they're pointed out that way, they're heading out, and if they're pointing, no, they're not out there, they're heading back. You know, they might have to smuggle something or other, you know.
Yeah.
And so, strange things happened. My father lost 6 cattle over the blooming smuggling. He was away in Donegal, and he had 6 cattle in a field he'd taken up there. And he was away in Donegal, and these ones were bringing down a load of cattle to smuggle them through the field. And his cattle were all mixed up with them, and they brought his with them. And the police was out hanging right yonder and seized the whole cattle. He never got a shilling for them. He went, when he came home from Donegal, he went over to say that his cattle were stolen. Didn't matter. Come on, that was it.
No,
well, during the war there, when there was no petrol, and that my father worked for O'Callaghan's in Limerick, the tannery down in Limerick. He used to travel for this end of the country round all the factories and towns. A lot of the towns used to start leather, and that was big business at the time.
In the tanneries?
Right. It was big business.
What was your father's first name?
He was William Robert Johnston.
And that's what he did? He was traveled, a traveller?
Round doing the leather for them.
Yeah.
And he used to bring a bicycle with him. And he'd get the train to get on the train, and he'd go on the narrowest railway line up through Donegal, you know, from Barnsmore Gap, the narrowest railway line running through that, you see. And he'd get off maybe in the town, and he'd get on the bike, and he made him 9 or 10 calls to do.
All on the bike?
On the bike. He had to lift the money for them, do you see, during the war. They needed to get the money lift, nobody'd send it in. And he did the whole of Donegal on the bike. Well, he'd go as far as he could on the train, you know, on the lanes, and then he'd do his best from that then on.
Right.
Sure,
goodness,
that was some growing, aye. So, there was a place down in Donegal, and I should have written fit anything down, I can't remember their name. But they had boats along with the speed shop. It might be the co-op now in Donegal. Wait a minute. Well, anyway, they'd order maybe a ton of leather. 2 ton of leather. And it says, well, the boats will be down in Limerick on Thursday. Tell them to have the leather down on the docks, and we'll bring it up to save the rate rail charges.
Yeah.
The boats will be down, and they can bring the leather up with them. He says, up to Donegal to save it. It was not unusual.
Oh, it is indeed, yeah.
You know, you'd think the light wouldn't go on, you know. That's the way it was.
But that's
know?
How they got around.
Another thing too, he couldn't take down Donegal, was the white fivers.
Describe what were the white fivers?
They were an English Bank of England white fiver, and it was done sort of like fancy copperplate writing or whatever you call it, you know. And you see, apparently there was a flood of them in Donegal. Oh, he couldn't take them. He couldn't take them, and if anyone thought they were genuine, you had to sign your name and address on them and all that, you know.
And were they not accepted here?
No, there was a fake ones, you see.
Oh, I see.
Apparently some of they blamed the trawler men up in Kitty Beds over there, some of they were blamed, you know, for dealing with the Germans, and the Germans paid them with these wonderful copies, you see, that were done off. They were blamed enough for all these white favours appearing. They were trying to bust the English economy, you know, lose faith in the money.
Yeah.
But that's the way it ended up, you know. You had
it was extraordinary, wasn't it, at times then? But I think it was in those days, Harold, it was called the provos, you know. Mm. The provos were the ones who were involved in robberies and
they're robbing banks.
Yes,
and they robbed the Dowra Bank there one morning. They were coming down here, and they hijacked the car and brought it over to Garrison there. I think they burnt the car there and brought the money with them and left him to the manager. He used to come down and have a bank down here, travelling, you know, France, you know. That was done once. You know,
imagine one morning they just walked and they took money from the bank.
No, they hijacked the car. He was coming down because they know he'd have money down with him, you know. They used to bring a couple of thousand down, people who wanted checks changed, and the usual. banking business at the time, you know.
Yeah.
So it affected him badly for years after it aired. The short of it.
What was his name, the bank manager at the time?
Lord, what was this year's name was? Jeez, I sure knew him well. Small wee man. Jeez, I can't think of it.
Yeah.
That's a long
so time. How many years ago now was that?
That would be in the early 70s.
Yeah.
In the early 70s. So then the guards then put on more security on him. Used to come down, this old guard would be down with him, you know.
And so did they have somebody looking after him and protecting him?
In later times.
Did they?
They followed him down.
Yeah.
The old guard.
God.
See, it put on security onto it that they didn't have. But it had more deposits that Northern Bank.
So listen, Harold, thank you for all your time. But tell me, how long have you been in the business here?
55 years, 57 years.
And no notion of retiring at any stage?
Well, I am retired. You know, that's why I'm able to chat fellas like you.